At some point, the world is going to go into a crisis, or a country is going to go into a crisis. It might be the UK, it might be Italy, might even be the United States, but something is going to happen. Things are very, very taut in the financial world at the moment. When that happens, I think they will close the banks. You'll wake up on a Sunday afternoon or Sunday morning and say, and hear the news that they've shut the banks, not going to open on Monday. And then by Monday evening or Tuesday, you'll get the announcement that we're having a new currency, the CBDC, and don't worry, it'll be one-to-one against the old currency. But there'll be some restrictions on your ability to convert your old money into the new money. If we step back to about 2011, the Federal Reserve had assets of around $2 trillion and a capital reserves of about $40 billion. So back then, the leverage on the balance sheet was about 50 times, which is quite leveraged. Right now, they've got over $8.5 trillion of assets on the balance sheet, and their capital is still about $35 billion. So they're leveraged over 200 times. In any financial institution, that is a situation which can go seriously wrong. And where I think we've got to is it is, in fact, going wrong. We've got two big problems at the moment on the balance sheet. The first one is their assets were purchased over the last decade when interest rates were very, very low. So they're mortgage-backed securities and treasury bills and treasury bonds, probably yielding something of the order of 2.5%. That's a guess. I don't know. But at the same time, the liability side of the balance sheet is the deposits from banks and depository institutions, on which they'll be now paying about 4%. So what's happened is they're, first of all, they're mismatched in their maturity. They have long assets with a long maturity and a low interest rate, and they have short liabilities with a high interest rate. That's a loss-making combination. And in fact, the Federal Reserve is reporting on its balance sheet as we speak that it's making losses for the first time in its history. So that has the propensity to go wrong, because if they keep making losses, sooner or later on the income and expenses side, they're going to run out of capital. Already their reserves have been depleted, and they're in, they're showing, actually, if I look at the balance sheet, they're showing a negative reserve of $9 billion. And that is only going to get bigger as they make losses going forwards, unless they lower the interest rates. The other issue that the Federal Reserve has got is this portfolio of bonds that it bought over the last decade. We all know that bond prices have fallen a lot. I'm going to say at least 15%. So on the $8 trillion of assets, you can see that even a 10% fall in those assets would be $800 billion compared with their share capital of $35 billion. It will have, on paper at least, have wiped out that share capital. Technically, that means that the Federal Reserve is insolvent. You know, insolvent is not bankrupt, and it's only paper losses, and they can get that back over time. But where we've got to today is a situation where the Federal Reserve must be talking to the Treasury about how they're going to recapitalize the central bank. You can't carry on forever with no capital and no reserves. And if I was Goldman Sachs or JP Morgan, I would have some concerns if I'm making deposits into an insolvent bank. So I think that's where we are at the moment. I mean, from a simple layman's point of view, it's as if you have an income of $100 and you have a mortgage going out of the door of $200. You're making a loss and you can't continue until you're forever, because sooner or later your capital runs out.
Dubbed the central bank to the world's central banks, the Bank for International Settlements raised the concerns in its latest quarterly report, in which it also said this year's market upheaval had, by and large, been navigated without many major issues. Its main warning, though, was what it described as the FX swap debt, blind spot that risked leaving policymakers in a fog. FX swap markets, where, for example, a Dutch pension fund or Japanese insurer borrows dollars and lends euro or yen in the spot leg before later repaying them, having a history of problems. The $80 trillion plus U.S. dollars hidden debt estimate exceeds the stocks of dollar treasury bills, repo, and commercial paper combined, while the churn of deals was almost $5 trillion U.S. dollars per day in April, two-thirds of daily global FX turnover. For both non-U.S. banks and non-U.S. non-banks, such as pension funds, dollar obligations from FX swaps are now double their on-balance sheet dollar debt, it estimated.
The nature of money is going to change quite dramatically. The old systems of trust and of ownership will have to adapt radically. Maybe the financial system will become so complicated as AI takes over more and more of the action that it will be just too complicated for the human mind. So how does the system function when no human really understands it?
So you might have missed what happened Wednesday afternoon at the Fed, but they started their CBDC, Central Bank Digital Currency. By the way, India just rolled out its retail pilot program for digital rupees as well. Don't worry. I think maybe we should start having the conversation, because this is coming. Maybe we should start having the conversation of, gosh, this looks like the mark of the beast. I mean, doesn't it?
But surely it's not.
Surely it's not. Of course not.
Not from the U.S. government.
No. They never do anything underhanded or evil.
Never.
Never.
Especially when Democrats are in control.
Amen.
FTX blew up in spectacular fashion. It looks like fraud. But in the wake of that, rather than thinking through, like, why did regulators let this happen, there's a new effort underway to regulate every single financial transaction that occurs in this country through something called the Central Bank Digital Currency, CBDC. If that happens, we're done. They can control you with a flick of a switch. So you should know.
When Omarova was nominated for control of the currency, she had just published an article in the Vanderbilt Law Review saying inflation is a problem. No problem with CBDC. You just freeze everybody's bank accounts. They can't get any money.
Amazing.
Yeah.
You have this balance of power between the people and the bankers. And now what is happening under the guise of COVID-19 is the bankers have decided they no longer want to share power with the electorate or the people's representatives. And whether through FASB 56 or levering the governments up so they're deeply in debt and dependent on the central banks have decided essentially to take over. And the ultimate sort of completion of this will be when they introduce digital currencies controlled and operated by the central bank. Why is that important? Because they won't be currencies, Dell. They will be a financial control system. To implement that system, they need the vaccine passports. And the goal of the vaccine passports have nothing to do with health. They have to do with implementing a new digital financial transaction system, which is in essence complete control. So I call it a slavery system. Dr. Naomi Wolf said, vaccine passports are the end of human liberty in the West. And she's absolutely right.
So when you say digital currencies, you know, at many of these events I've been speaking at, many of my friends are, you know, big on Bitcoin or Ethereum, saying this is our way forward. This is how we set ourselves free. This is how we break free of those power mongers running the world. And it sounds like you're saying, no, that's exactly how they finished the debt flow.
This is not what the central bankers are planning.
When Omarova was nominated for control of the currency, she had just published an article in the Vanderbilt Law Review saying inflation is a problem. No problem with CBDC. You just freeze everybody's bank accounts. They can't get any money.
Amazing.
Yeah.
How close do you think they are to doing that? Because we've seen them do extreme moves out of the blue, like the lockdown.
I think the fastest they could try is maybe a year and a half. What they seem to be doing is with the WHO treaty and the vaccine passports, you know, getting a complete control system in place before CBDC, because I think they need another 2 years. Maybe they can do it in a year. FTX was an op that got brought down in an op. Okay. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. I was going to ask you about it, but immediately after it happened, they said, you know what? We need that regulation.
That's part of the op.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. You know, FTX was a CBDC marketing plan. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, how are you going to market slavery? Right. It's hard.
It is.
You need lots of contrived events.
Up until a month before that crash, they had Freed on the cover of Fortune magazine. They had him on Meet the Press. They were hailing
him. Well, the Times just put out an invite to come hear Freed speak with Yellen. And did you see that?
Yes.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. It's unbelievable. It's very funny because they feel much more empowered to just, you know, just do an op and make it obvious it's an op. Do you know what I mean? And I've never heard a crypto expert who understood the control grid and how it worked. Mm-hmm. So they understood crypto, but they didn't understand the control grid and how it gets implemented, whether on the regulatory side, whether on the control side, whether on the surveillance side. And there was just an extraordinary naivete about that. I mean, once they get vaccine passports and CBDCs, they can do that.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And this is then you're talking about a slavery system, and then they can do whatever they want. But the way they'll take down crypto is not by taking down the crypto. They'll take down the people, you know, involved in crypto. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll assert control of the in and out, and then you'll assert the control of all the people you need to assert control of to get control.
Ideally, the response to COVID should be the establishment of a global healthcare system, a basic healthcare system for the entire human race.
I mean, COVID makes it accelerates the process of digitalization and automatization. It legitimizes the deployment of mass surveillance, even in democratic countries, and it makes surveillance go under your skin. Just imagine the situation when everybody goes around all the time with some biometric bracelet or other device that constantly monitors what's happening inside your body. So the moment your body temperature starts rising or there are other signs that something is wrong, the health authority knows that you're sick and you're isolated, and that's it. That's the end of the epidemic. If we had such a system today, there won't be COVID. The same system that can know if I just got COVID or I have the flu can also know if I'm angry or if I'm bored or if I'm happy.
And many of the things that I visit a lot, both Europe and North America and China. And one of my main impressions is that many of the things I talk about and people in the West react with apprehension and fear, in China, the reaction to exactly the same topics is excitement. Wow, we can do that.
You decide you're going to bring FTX down right after the election because you don't need it anymore. Mm-hmm. And you do it in a way you're going to throw it under control of the bankruptcy courts and the Department of Justice. Mm-hmm. And what happens in August? Tom Brady and his wife go to the Bahamas.
Yeah.
And come back looking very scared.
Yeah.
There's a cease and desist order that flies around at the same time. And the question is, why is Brady skipping, you know, training? And I think the first two games of the season or something. I don't know. I have to look into the detail of it, but
he's getting a divorce as well.
Well, is he getting a divorce or is that for asset protection?
Yeah, right. Amazing.
Same as Gates.
They had him so wrapped in with that operation. He was doing commercials for it.
Right. So in theory, it depends on how they, but it sounds to me like he got a tip.
They needed that friendly face on top. Once in a while, we see these things crack, like Enron did, that opened up?
Well, you know, to me, FTX just looks like Enron too.
It does, yeah.
And I'll tell you why. Enron, if I'm right about Enron, and this is a guess, I'm not sure, can't prove this, but Enron was laundering the money they were pulling out of DOD and HUD. Mm-hmm. And you had the same people running the board as ran the big contract, the payment systems at DOD and HUD. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the payment system guys are on both sides. And, you know, and sort of that money is coming through. And then suddenly in August of 2001, Skilling quits. And I said, uh-oh, they clued him in on what's next. And he wanted to get out. And then, of course, 9/11 happened. And they 9/11 basically destroyed all the records of everything that was being laundered out.
Right.
And or that's what it appears. And, you know, and then they put this guy in charge of cleaning up Enron, who just happens to be the guy they put in charge of cleaning up FTX. Well, I think crypto, first and foremost, was simply a prototype for CBDCs.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Right. So, you know, here's the way we used to do it on Wall Street at the big firms. Solomon Brothers is perfect. You tell 10 different vice presidents to go do something. You wouldn't tell them that you told 9 other to do the same thing. And they'd all go try and do it. And they'd all come up with different ways of doing it. And then they'd end up competing and fighting with each other. And from it would emerge, it was a way of getting the best one fast. So yeah. Instead of asking one team and then firing them and getting a new, you just ask 10 guys to do the same thing. And that's the way you prototype. Prototyping is very organic and very messy. And you just try lots of stuff. And you know that most of them will fail. But in the process, you'll figure out what works.
Right.
So I think crypto first and foremost was a prototype for how you get to a digital control system. And the mistake we're making is we're allowing Mr. Global to take it 100% digital, at which point we're in a digital concentration camp. We're yeah. toast. If yeah. we allow that, we're toast. It's over.
And that's the central banking digital currency. That's, you
yes.
know, that
essentially,
the,
yes.
the digital ID, the merger of those two, that's it.
You're in a slavery system. You're going to be in a digital concentration camp. If they want to take your kids, they will. No law. There's no law. It's a slavery system.
Right.
And they'll do whatever they want.
They could even do it and morally grandstand that they're doing it for climate change, for example.
Oh, right. Right. Cannibalism, good for climate change, you know.
Catherine Austin Fitz, I have a question for you, ma'am. These central bank digital currencies, how do they work?
So it's a digital currency and an all digital system that can be controlled centrally. So, for example, we saw during COVID-19, there were rules saying you couldn't travel more than a certain amount of miles from your house, right? So there's certain behaviors you couldn't do. This is a digital system where the central bankers, in very centralized ways, can make rules about what you can and cannot do with your money, and they can enforce the rules with total surveillance.
If people were to read Executive Order 14067, what kind of things are they going to find within Biden's Executive Order 14067?
So they're not going to understand what CBDCs are by reading the executive order.
Okay.
So I would recommend that everybody go to Solari.com, and there's a section on the homepage called Cash Every Day. And if you click on it, there are a series of videos that will explain to you in very short order. The first one is a 56-second video from Augustine Karstens, the general manager of the Bank of International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, who will explain to you in 56 seconds exactly how CBDCs will work.
We tend to establish the equivalence with cash, and there is a huge difference there. For example, in cash, we don't know, for example, who's using a $100 bill today. We don't know who is using a 1,000 peso bill today. A key difference with the CBDC is that central bank will have absolute control on the rules and regulations that will determine the use of that expression of central bank liability. And also, we will have the technology to enforce that. Those two issues are extremely important, and that makes a huge difference with respect to what cash is.
How concerned are you about the collapse of the U.S. dollar, sir?
I'm very concerned. And it's more than just the U.S. There's, you know, there's a thing called the BRICS nations. BRICS stands for Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. And what happened in 2021, I believe, when we abandoned Afghanistan, on that day, Saudi Arabia shifted allegiances from America, trading in dollars, petrodollars. Saudi Arabia switched sides to China and Russia. It's the end of the dollar system. So the end is near for the US dollar. And my concern is it's going to wipe out stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs. Just for my generation, the boomer generation, we're in serious trouble because the only reason our stocks, bonds, mutual funds are up is because the Fed and the Treasury just kept printing more and more money. Instead of fixing the problem from 2008, they just kept printing more money. Mm-hmm. And it's about to come to an end. So that's why when I say to people, buy gold, silver, and Bitcoin, you know, you want to stay in what I call real assets, tangible assets. That's my opinion. Most people say buy U.S. treasuries. That's Harry Dent. I wouldn't trust anything printed by the U.S. government, but that's me. I don't like anything that can be printed.
Now, the BRICS nations, again, to repeat, for everybody who's hearing this for the first time, you might hear about the BRICS nations. That's Brazil, Russia, India, China, Africa. Those comprise roughly 41% of the Earth's population, and they are teaming up together to unseat the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency. And now you have Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Mexico, Nigeria, Venezuela, Algeria, Turkey, and Argentina all teaming up to unseat the U.S. dollar as the world's U.S.
You're on it, man. You're on it. You're on it. Everybody, listen to this guy. He knows what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. You have the macro picture. Very few people have that point of view. And the great reset will be the collapse of the dollar.
Inflation.
When demand is greater than supply, either you get shortages or you get price increases. And actually what we had was a mixture of both.
We are in an inflationary spiral.
66% of people polled expect inflation to get worse.
The value of the dollar, since I was born, has declined by 94% to 6 cents.
We are about to face one of the greatest periods of uncertainty in American history. Organize your finances, expand your knowledge, your insight as to what it is that you have, and then start making decisions.
When people go to bh-pm.com, they can schedule a free consultation. You're talking about going from the intangible into the tangible.
If you can't hold it in your hand, then it's not yours. You don't own it. You can physically hold actual gold and silver.
It ships fully insured directly to your home.
Inflation rates are going to continue to rise.
Don't wait. Don't keep putting off decisions that you know you must make.